Shalom, shalom. Be shalom, shalom. Be shalom, shalom. Be shalom, shalom. Be shalom, shalom.
We believe in
peace. Shalom, shalom.
We believe in peace.
Shalom, shalom.
We believe in peace.
Shalom, shalom.
Well, good evening and welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. That cut opening tonight's show was called Peace, Shalom, Shalom by Emma's Revolution. I invite you to look them up on the internet. That's Emma's Revolution. They're a women's group, and they're obviously into peace and social justice. Well, tonight we have a great show for you. It's been getting a lot of buzz on Facebook. I have as my guest co-founders of Kohenet, and I'm sure they'll, I hope they'll help me if I pronounce that incorrectly, Kohenet, the Hebrew Priestess Institute. We'll have Rabbi Jill Hammer and author-musician Taya Scher. Both will share with listeners their new initiative to train Jewish women in the art of becoming a priestess. We'll discuss their training and ordination of women and the work of their progressive synagogue. They're also going to talk a little bit about tonight's full moon, and we're even going to get a song from them, so it's a really nice evening is planned for you, so please stay tuned with us for the entire show. But before we start that conversation, a few things I'd like to share, some housekeeping, if you will. I want to say thanks to a few listeners. The first one is from Germany. Her name is Barbara. She wrote to say, I'd like to thank you very much for answering my cry for help in December. I was moved that you, you being as busy as you are, would take the time for me. I'm also very grateful for the freedom that you have to talk about Goddess and the Sacred Feminine. We don't have such an opportunity as that in Germany. I appreciate very much the links you put out, and you inspire me. Thank you very much. Well, thank you for that, Barbara. That's gas in my tank. You know, knowing people are getting something meaningful makes the world a difference when I have to pay for airtime to keep the show on the air, especially, hint, hint, we can always use donations. And I always respond to listeners. I'm here for you. Just like with our other listener, Anna, who contacted me on Facebook, she said, your podcast that featured guests Phyllis Chesler and David was eye-opening and so liberating. I couldn't even sleep that night after having listened to the podcast. I was so excited about what I heard. Most of my life, I've been a free spirit who is gone about living the way I want to live. And believe me, I've encountered a tremendous amount of resistance because of it. I've always believed in feminist values, but didn't take the responsibility to become educated about women's issues as I should be. After having listened to your podcast, that has changed. You've made me reevaluate the role of education in my life. That podcast was so amazing. I've been sending all of my friends the link to it, and I will never forget the feeling I had after listening, and I hope that every friend of mine who hears it ends up feeling the same way as I did. Well, thank you, Anna. I really appreciate your words and Barbara's words. I really do see the show as continuing education, especially in a world that's run by right-wing conservative ideology, you know, mostly dominating the media, where the kind of things we talk about would get swept beneath the rug because it doesn't serve patriarchy, you know. It doesn't serve the 1% who have all the money in the world to envelop all of us in their messages of exploitation and domination. So thank you, Barbara. Thank you again, Anna. I appreciate it. And another listener from California writes in, Jane wants me to ask all you listeners out there for your feedback, especially if you're outside California and the United States. She wants to know if you're seeing chemtrails emanating from planes in your skies. If you don't know what I'm talking about when I say chemtrails, please look it up. They're vapors of toxic substances that are very controversial out there on the internet and have many people concerned. What are the chemtrails? Why are these toxic materials being dispersed over our towns and cities? You know, there's lots of theories out there, from cloud seeding to weather control to some intent to pollute the environment. or some as yet undiscovered reason, Google chemtrails, C-H-E-M, trails. It can have an air of paranoia about it or conspiracy theories, I will admit. But, you know, we're living in a time when we see every day just how many things are being kept from the public. So let me know if you're seeing chemtrails in your skies, and we can share notes, and maybe we'll do a show on it if we can get an expert guest to tell us if we really do have anything to be afraid of. I hope not. And let's see. I think if we can ask the patience of Jill and Taya for another moment, there's something I'd like to share with you. It's called I Can Hear Her Breathing, and it came about because I stumbled on a quote by the author and social justice activist Arundhati Roy, an Indian woman. Her quote went like this: "Another world is not only possible, she is on her way. On a quiet day, I can hear her breathing," unquote. Well, when I read that quote for the first time, the breath caught in my throat, and I have to tell you, the hair stood up on back of my neck because it made me remember. I'd been invited to Wisconsin to present at a weekend workshop, which turned out to be more than a wonderful experience. I went there thinking I was going up there to teach these women just the workshop material, but the sharing and the activities I participated in were a beautifully reciprocal dance. Besides the bonding and the fun, issues I never quite had been able to banish from my psyche had dispersed in the safety of the ritual the night before, and I was feeling very light and open and gloriously happy and fulfilled. And as the weekend came to a close and the time to drive back to the airport was drawing near, I grabbed a few moments of solitary time behind the dormitory where we were staying, which was located about 100 yards off a serene and shining lake. And between the lake and the dorm, trees had been planted in a circle with barely 2 to 3 feet of space between their trunks. And inside the circle was a bench. I felt sort of drawn within the circle, and I went in and sat on the bench just desiring a few moments of quiet contemplation and what really felt like nature's embrace right there. Well, as I sat there enjoying a cool breeze on my cheeks, glimpsing the reflection of the sun on the lake between the tree trunks before me, I suddenly realized I heard a rhythmic breathing, in and out, in and out. Well, where was it coming from? In my mind, I began a process of elimination. I held my own breath for a few moments, thinking perhaps here in this small space among this odd configuration of trees, I was hearing the echo of my own breath. But no, it wasn't me. I looked around to make sure there was no one else there, perhaps just beyond my initial line of sight. No, I wasn't hearing the incoming tide of the lake either. I sat there mesmerized as I listened. No, this sound was coming from this very spot where I sat. Dare I ever utter the next thought that crossed my mind? It was as if I was sitting within the body of Goddess and I was hearing her breathing. This was incredulous, but I was going to go with it, you know, and just listen and feel and receive. You know, I soaked in the magic of the sacred space. The hair stood up on back of my neck and arms. I felt that familiar cold chill up my spine. And my tears turned into sobs of joy. What an emotional experience. And for hindsight, many of us might speak in metaphor, as perhaps the novelist and activist Arundhati Roy is speaking above in that quote I read to you about Gaia or the coming new paradigm of the sacred feminine. But this was different. This experience went beyond metaphor or even feeling inspired in some natural landscape. This wasn't merely equating the ebb and flow of the ocean tides with her breath as we attempt to personify her and embrace her mysteries. This felt as if it were another phenomena of a dimension I had yet to experience. Was I crazy to even contemplate hearing the inhaling and exhaling of our mother? Well, sometimes we just have to shut off that left brain and just feel her incredible gifts. Those few minutes sitting in that sacred grove in Wisconsin will no doubt be some of the most profound and magical minutes of my life. So all I have to say is thank you, Mother. Thank you for that precious gift, because I could hear you breathing. Okay, well, I hope you enjoyed that. It's true. And I'm going to save the rest of what I have prepared for you for tonight until after the interview with Jill and Taya. I want to talk a little bit about full moons because I think tonight we have one, and the ladies are going to talk a little bit about that as well. And after a few other odds and ends, but let's not delay any longer discussing the Hebrew Priestess Institute. Let me start by finding the bio about the Institute and these ladies. So you know just how wonderful and visionary they are. So the Institute, the Kohenet Hebrew Priestess Institute, revives and re-embodies Judaism through the gifts of women, spiritual leaders, and through experience of the sacred feminine. Kohenet facilitates the creation of transformative Jewish ritual that is embodied, earth-based, feminist, and inspired by traditions of women's spiritual leadership. It draws on ancient Israelite sources, Jewish texts and folklore, Kabbalah, and contemporary creativity. Since 2006, the Kohenet Institute has ordained 28 women as Koheno, or Hebrew priestesses. Conducts a three-year training program through the Eliat, I'm murdering these words. I know the ladies will correct me. I hope they do. Through the Eilat Shayim Center for Jewish Spirituality in Falls Village, Connecticut. It offers programs throughout the U.S. and creates resources for Judaism informed by the Divine Feminine. The Hebrew Priestess Institute was co-founded and co-directed by Rabbi Jill Hammer and Taya Shear. Their book, The Hebrew Priestess, Ancient and New Paths of Jewish Women's Spiritual Leadership, is forthcoming in the spring of 2004 from Ben Yehuda Press. And Sidur Hey Kohenet, a Hebrew Priestess prayer book, is available for purchase online. And Kohenet is currently accepting applications for new training class beginning in July of this year. And just briefly about the ladies themselves, Rabbi Jill Hammer, Ph.D., is a co-founder of the Institute, director of spiritual education at the Academy for Jewish Religion. She's the author of 5 books. Titles are Sister at Sinai, New Tales of Biblical Women, The Jewish Book of Days, A Companion for All Seasons, The Omer Calendar of Biblical Women, The Hebrew Priestess, Ancient and New Visions of Jewish Women's Spiritual Leadership, and The Garden of Time. She's a poet, ritualist, and essayist, and her work has been published in many journals and anthologies. And Ms. Shear plays passionately in the realms of transformative ritual and embodied vocalization. She has co-founded and co-directs the Hebrew Priestess Institute, a modern-day mystery school, and clergy training for women embracing the goddess in a Jewish context. Her CD, Wild Earth Shebrew, Hallelujah All Night, and Torah Tantrika have been heralded as cutting-edge mystic medicine music. She serves as a congregational rabbi and guides life cycle ceremony in and around Washington, D.C., and she is also the co-author of The Hebrew Priestess and Sidur HaKohenet, The Hebrew Priestess Prayer Book. So ladies, first let me just apologize for my horrible pronunciations. Please correct me, all the words I said wrong.
Karen, it's so wonderful to be with you. This is Taya. I'm deeply grateful, and it's a pleasure.
So, first of all, your institute, Kohenet, did I pronounce that right or wrong?
Kohenet Hebrew Priestess Institute.
Well, I wasn't too far off. Okay,
great. Kohenet.
All right. So, first of all, let me just ask you right out of the box, because I've had some people email me and ask, are any of your teachings in tribute to or inspired by Mary Magdalene?
So Mary Magdalene is a figure that a lot of women are interested in because of her mysterious position in the New Testament. We generally don't work with her because we're working with the Hebrew Bible and the characters that we find there and with Jewish tradition. But we're excited by, you know, all forms of ancient priestessing.
Okay. Would you consider Mary Magdalene an ancient Jewish priestess or pagan priestess? Or, I mean, how is she looked upon there at the Institute? Either of you ladies.
Mary Magdalene, I would say, is definitely a sister of many of the women that we're working with. As Jill mentioned, most of the priestesses that we are studying and seeking to connect through our practice are women who appeared in the Hebrew Bible, in Torah, and in books of prophets and writings and later teachings. We haven't worked much directly with Mary, and yet many of our women who are drawn to ancient Near Eastern priestessing do have connections with the Mary Magdalene sacred energy, of course.
Okay. Well, the tradition of priestessing exists in many narratives of the Hebrew Bible. As scholars and ritualists there at the Institute, tell us about some of the work there that you're uncovering.
So when I was growing up, I always had the impression that while priestesses existed in other traditions, they didn't exist in the Bible. But when Tay and I went looking, we discovered that priestesses are mentioned or implied in a lot of places in the Bible. Most notably, the prophetess Miriam plays a lot of roles that priestesses played, including prophecy, dream work, and music. There are also mentions of groups of women doing ritual work throughout the Bible. So the idea that there are no priestesses in the Bible, that this was a tradition devoid of women's spiritual leadership, is really not the case. And as we uncover different stories, like the story of Deborah the prophetess, whose name means bee, which is an ancient word for priestess, we get more and more of a sense that that we're continuing an ancient tradition that really was present.
Okay. Well, and I wonder, with Judaism being so patriarchal, I mean, I think there's even a phrase in there, and I don't know the exact wording, but something about, being glad you aren't born a woman. How do you reconcile those things?
That's a great question. I want to speak to that particular prayer first. We definitely, as a part of the work of Kohenet, are engaged in reclaiming and innovating liturgy that is resonant for women working within this tradition, honoring women's bodies, honoring the sacred feminine and the goddess. And so we, in our context, are giving thanks to be made women and praying to goddess in the feminine form. And a big part of our work is reclaiming that liturgy. And we also, as Jill mentioned, are digging deep to find what's under those layers of patriarchy. We work with 13 netivot, 13 priestess paths or archetypes culled from the Hebrew Bible and ancient Near Eastern traditions that are models for ways that women were leading or may have been leading then that were unique to women's ways. And through text study, through experiential work, through ritual practice, we are remembering, uncovering, and reclaiming what may have been obscured but is ready to come forth again at this time.
So that particular passage that I referred to, is there another interpretation for that maybe this is, let me suggest that Greek mythology, for instance, when patriarchy comes along, things start to shift and change. Meanings change. You have Athena, who's birthed out of her father's head, and rather than in the life-giving task or role is now in the hands of the male instead of the female. But of course, we in Metis, her mother plays no role in giving birth to Athena. So I know as patriarchy comes along, things shift. Do you think it was the same thing in Judaism? You have certain things that, I mean, can you give examples of things that maybe you have to rethink or recover that, might be problematic if somebody picks up picks up Judaism and starts, looking at it and saying, well, how can this, you know, how can women be equal here?
One of the things that...
Jill, why don't you take that one?
Sure. One of the things that is really exciting about our work is that we get the opportunity to look at the ancient biblical texts, which really have many voices, and see where through patriarchy, you know, women's experiences and experiences with the goddess are poking through. In the book of Proverbs, wisdom is depicted as a woman, as a, you know, as a teacher of the world. The temple, you know, has this sacred space at the center, which has a uterine quality to it. It's like a womb. It's a place of creation. It's a place that's cleansed by the blood of sacrifices. It has a it has a quality that, that could be depicted as feminine. There are a lot of places where you can see that biblical Judaism was a tradition that had a lot of influences, and there was a strong patriarchal influence, but there were also places where women and the feminine were present.
Okay. You know, for a short time, I took some Kabbalah classes, and I was intrigued by some of the things that were so closely aligned with earth-based spirituality, actually. In fact, you know, some of the things they were doing over at the Kabbalah Center in Los Angeles here looked downright pagan, and although they didn't name it that, you know. And they taught some interesting concepts, and I wonder if, you know, if there's some of the concepts you teach there at the Institute. For one thing, they said that they believed that women were actually more spiritual than men, that, you know, women were the spiritual superior to men, and that if men really expected to lead a life of joy and fulfillment and be the best he could possibly be, he really had to learn to embrace the sacred feminine and within himself. And I wonder if any of that resonates with you know, your teachings there.
Well, I personally don't feel that the idea that women are more spiritual than men is liberating for women. I think it puts women in a box, you know, and it's just as problematic a box as the box that says that women are less spiritual than men, which is also something that many traditions say. But I do find lots of stuff to mine in the Kabbalah and in Jewish mystical tradition because, as you say, the Kabbalah was interested in the feminine and had faces of God and names for God that were feminine, like the most famous is Shekhinah, the divine presence, which was, she became alive as a kind of partner for God and a bride and a queen. And those images are still, you know, potent and exciting, even though we have to work with them as modern-day women to see where they resonate. So, yes, the Kabbalah is a place that we look to as a resource, although we are also filtering that through our own needs as modern women.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important. Go ahead, Taya.
Oh, I'm sorry. You mentioned the earth-based traditions you experienced in your study and practice, perhaps, of Kabbalah. And that is definitely something that is an integral part of the work that we are up to at Kohenet, and really engaging the elements of earth and water and air and fire and finding those places in traditional Jewish ceremony and ritual where those elements are honored and present. There are so many holidays and core rituals that do engage those elements, but it's often overlooked. And so we give deep attention to the sacredness of the elements outside of us and within us.
Okay. All right. Remember to, you know, just be as close as you can to the mic, okay? I read in your materials that you sent me that the Institute honors the life cycle through transformative ritual. You have rituals for aging, divorce, fertility, recovery from abuse, healing from hysterectomy, you know, really important things for women. Would one of you like to speak to that a little bit?
Jill, do you want to take that one?
Sure. We try to pay very close attention to the ritual needs of women because they've been ignored for centuries, you know, or not, if not entirely ignored, certainly downplayed. So we look at the life cycles of the women in our community to see where the moments are that really need to be marked, and we engage those moments of passage through ritual. So if one of our community turns 80, we make a crowning ceremony for her to celebrate her as a wise woman. Or if one of the women in our community is trying to get pregnant, we are with her in fertility ritual. We are looking for not only traditional moments of life cycle, but moments that are specifically important to an individual. Like if people are moving houses or taking a new name or changing careers or dealing with a difficult episode from the past, we are drawing on the resources of Jewish tradition and also on our own modern skilled ritualists to make those moments meaningful and to allow there to be witness for important times in women's lives.
Yeah, I mean,
and
a lot of these life passage. Go ahead, Taya.
I just wanted to name, and we particularly focus on supporting women in rituals of the body. So much of the work of the priestess is walking in liminal space. And in Judaism, there are moments that are defined as tameh or tumah, which is usually translated as a state of impurity. And for these states that are often seen as impure, states of menstruation or of being near death or postpartum, we really understand and probe into deeper layers of liminality, these moments of being between the worlds, and so make ceremony in a context that honors the way we become temples in our bodies at these moments of liminal space. And so reclaiming ways of understanding states of being is a core part of the ceremonies and our practice as well.
Well, you know, being a recovering Catholic myself, I can speak for Christianity. I can't speak for Judaism, but, you know, Christianity separates us from our body. Does Judaism pretty much do the same thing? So would that make this, you know, just like you're trying to reclaim the body as so many other teachings of the sacred feminine are as well, is that a departure from Judaism just like it's a departure from Christianity for, you know, women who you know, maybe grew up, you know, a Catholic or a Protestant or something like that?
It's a departure from what many people understand as Judaism and traditional practice, and yet there are many strands in our tradition that deeply invite us into body practice and honoring the body. And so while we are known often as the people of the book, we are reclaiming and becoming again and anew the people of the body through ways we pray and explore. So yes and yes, it's not something that is widely practiced or present to, and it's very much there and is something that we are uncovering and working with deeply.
Okay. One of the people in my chat room are asking me to ask, you know, since this is, looks like it's kind of a blend of some Judaism, some earth-based, some goddess spirituality, you know, maybe even eclectic, so to speak, do you do Shabbats and mikvahs?
Yes, absolutely. Shabbat is one of the most beautiful times in our community. We make it a time of song and dance. We prepare for Shabbat by going to the nearest lake to immerse in the mikvah, using the water as a ritual gateway to Shabbat. And we celebrate. We see the Shabbat as the Kabbalists did, as an embodiment of the sacred, an embodiment of the sacred feminine. So it's a very joyful and full time for us.
Now,
and
isn't
it usually
the Shabbat
ends with
actually
with a drum circle.
Okay, go ahead, Taya. Taya, you were trying to say something?
Jill was just finishing her thought, saying that we like to close our Friday night prayer with drum circles always.
I'm sorry, I couldn't really make out what you said. Did you want to repeat that?
It's okay.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was about to ask, I know the, you know, my vague recollection from going to some of the Shabbats at the Kabbalah Center here in Los Angeles, it was actually had something to do with the marriage of the sacred feminine and divine masculine, is it not? Aren't they like recreating the wedding ceremony or something? Jill?
Yeah. Yes, the one of the prayer services of Friday night is a service to welcome the Divine Bride and conduct a wedding between her and the Divine Bridegroom, which is really very beautiful and an image that we work with. And we're aware that, you know, not everyone wants to be married and not everyone is straight, and so it's an image to be played with. But yes, the Kabbalah understands Friday night to be a divine wedding, and playing with that image of God as divine lover or the soul as divine lover is definitely something that moves me and our community, I think.
So, Taya, I realize that this is the Hebrew Priestess Institute. So is it just for women, or do you ever do services or teachings that also include men?
Wonderful question. Our training program, which is a 3.5-year-long immersion experience, is for women only. And we have programs that are mixed gender. At our training institute, many of our Shabbat gatherings and prayer moments are open to the wider community that gathers. And we are newly exploring ways to create more all-gender experiences. We have many men who are drawn to our work, both to explore ways of earth-based embodied Judaism and in service to and celebration of the goddess. And so we are continuing to understand ways to connect with folks of all genders, because there has been such great support from so many people of this work.
That's great. You know, I hate to keep going back to this, but it's, you know, my point of reference, and I realize you're trying to, you know, you're really visionary, and you're creating something new, something that's relevant for today, and, you know, something that's so needed, you know, a non-patriarchal view of the feminine, you know, through the Hebrew lens, I guess, you know, for women especially. And I guess I just wonder, you know, one of the things, I'd like to get your opinion about this, one of the things that really sort of annoyed me a bit at the Kabbalah Center was, you know, they still had, you know, when you'd go to services at the temple, they still had the men on one side of the room, the women on the other side of the room, and they believed that the, you know, the light emanated down through the men, and they were the ones that, you know, I guess shared it with everybody in the temple. And I forgive the imagery, but I'm seeing phallus and womb. You know, the light emanates through the portal, which is the male, and empties into the temple space, which is the womb, you know. And it felt like, especially since they were, you know, they said over and over again they believed that the woman was spiritually superior. I couldn't really understand the need for the separation of the genders, or, you know, why it was never the female at the front of the room that was channeling the emanations of the light. And I wonder if any of that has, you know, you if you work with those ideas, or maybe you've heard of those ideas, and you know, maybe like me, you know, it feels, you know, kind of sexist.
So
either of you.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to take this?
You can go, Jill, and then I'll add more if I want.
The practice of the Kabbalah Center is an Orthodox practice, and that's how Orthodox Jews pray, is with a division between men and women. Not all Orthodox Jews understand it as being about light. You know, some people understand it just as being about the way the Jewish law has come down. The added thing about the men channeling the light, you are absolutely right on that. That is a, you know, that's an image of phallus and womb, and it comes straight out of the Kabbalah. And that's why the Kabbalah is dangerous as a source about the divine feminine, because it has lots of beautiful images of the sacred feminine, you know, as bride, mother, warrior, peacemaker, all kinds of wonderful images. But there's also an underlying assumption about the roles of men and women that we really might not want to accept, and that really might not serve the idea of women being subjects of their own spirituality. So this is why I say, you know, watch out when someone says, oh, you're more spiritual, because usually what that means is not that you get to lead, but that you are supposed to follow. So it's a trap that I think it's better for women to claim their own spirituality and, you know, look through these ancient ideas to see what of those ideas really work for us when we are in spiritual community, because accepting them without critique can sometimes mean accepting ideas that are, as you say, patriarchal or sexist.
Right, right. Taya, did you want to add something to that?
I affirm all that Jill said, and I think part of our work is to provide context for folks who are drawn to Jewish mysticism and seeking a feminist model, a whole person model that honors women's power without relegating us to the side.
Okay. Well, you mentioned some of the priestesses that were in the narratives of the Bible. You mentioned Miriam. I wonder if you ladies have thought about reclaiming Lilith as a positive figure rather than how she exists. I mean, over at the Kabbalah Center, they called her the head of Satan's army. And, you know, I have to tell you, when they said that, I stopped going. You know, I was sort of tolerant of the sexism, because there were some really, really, really good things that, you know, I was getting out of the Kabbalah classes and the teachings. But, you know, they were just sort of blind to their sexism, I think. And I guess I'm just wondering where, if Lilith has a place at the Hebrew Institute. Jill?
Yeah. She absolutely does. We love Lilith stories. And you know, long before Kohenet came along, the Jewish feminist movement was claiming Lilith as a hero, you know, based on a medieval story about her where she is Adam's first wife and flees Adam and, you know, sets up on her own. So she became a kind of icon of Jewish feminism, you know, at a certain point. And we think she's great. She is she's a very complex figure in Jewish lore. What you heard at the Kabbalah Center comes straight out of the medieval Kabbalah, the idea that Lilith is Satan's partner. But interestingly enough, in the Kabbalah, when the world is in exile, when there's trouble in the world, Lilith is also God's concubine. So in a way, she's a face of the divine presence, even if she's one that has been demonized.
Okay. Go ahead, Taya.
I was just feeling called to, as Jill's naming Lilith as one of the faces of the sacred feminine, a chant comes to mind that we work with that names a number of different faces of the sacred feminine of the goddess in rooted tradition, and I would love to offer that in this moment, if this is a good moment to do so.
You know, Taya, I so apologize, but I'm having trouble understanding you. Could you please try to repeat that again? Because it feels like you were saying something rather important about Lilith, and I don't think it was really understandable.
Yes, I will try again. I just was saying that...
That's much better. Whatever you're doing now, please keep doing that.
I will keep doing that. And yes, as Jill was talking about the many faces of the sacred feminine in Jewish tradition, I was hearing a chant that we often sing at Kohenet that talks about multiple faces of the feminine divine, and I was wondering if now would be a good time to offer that.
Sure, yeah, especially since we can hear you so much better.
Excellent, I'm so glad. So I will share this song, and then maybe Jill will share a bit about the names of the feminine, which I'll be singing.
Sharina El Shaddai, Ima Ila'a, Temtemai. Sharina El Shaddai, Ima Ila'a, Temtemai. Summoning embodied, sacred she who dwells within. We celebrate, we co-create, me and the God, we are kin. Sharina El Shaddai, Ima Ila'a, Temtemai. Sharina El Shaddai, Ima Ila'a, Temtemai. Summoning embodied, sacred she who dwells within. We celebrate, we co-create, me and the goddess, we are kin. Sharina El Shaddai, Ima Ila'a, Temtemai. Sharina El Shaddai, Ima Ila'a, Temtemai.
So if it's okay, I'll say a little bit about what Taya just sang.
Sure.
We made this as a chant of goddess names from our tradition. The first is Shekhinah, a divine presence, which is a name from the Talmud and from later Kabbalah, the indwelling one, the one who dwells within the world. El Shaddai comes from the Bible. It's usually translated God Almighty, but Shad is a breast, so it may mean nourishing God, mountainous God, breasted God. So we use it as a name for goddess. Ima Ila'a comes straight from the Kabbalah. It means cosmic mother, exalted mother. Simsimai is a name we stole from the Talmud, from a Talmudic story of a queen who keeps a treasury. And we use her name as a name for the goddess, too. So we are always in the process of both finding ancient names and reclaiming them and discovering our own. It's one of the ways that we are learning about the sacred as she dwells in us.
Yeah, I find that we are all on that quest, you know, to uncover, you know, the women of herstory, because so many of their names, you know, have been swept beneath the rug or the sands of time, you know, so to speak. And, you know, we know that we're there at the center, you know, holding families together. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, there, you know, priestesses actually do exist more than we think in the narratives of the Hebrew Bible. So besides Miriam, what other, you know, female voices or imagery and the ones you just mentioned, are there others that, you know, stand out that, you know, listeners should be aware of?
Yes. So often I actually have to begin by acknowledging a teacher of ours, Davina Tubal, who wrote a radical book called Sarah the Priestess, where she posited that Sarah, the matriarch of Genesis, was behaving like a priestess would have in Mesopotamia. And she died the week that Kohenet was founded, so we always felt her as a guardian angel and a guiding spirit. There are also groups of women in the Bible who act as priestesses. There are women who serve at the door of the tent of meeting where God dwells in the wilderness, and they donate their mirrors to make the sacred washing basin for the shrine. And what's great about this is that mirrors are always used for shamanic journey in the ancient world. So these women are really serving as priestesses. There are women called Kadeshot, holy women. There are women who are sacred weavers who are making weavings either for the goddess Asherah or later on for the door of the Holy of Holies. So really, once you begin to dig, there's really a great deal there.
Okay. Well, and I think it's wonderful that you've gotten so eclectic, and I say eclectic in the most positive way. I mean, I love eclectic because you can, like you said, you're pulling in indigenous, you're pulling in shamanic elements, you're pulling in earth-based stuff, feminist stuff, Jewish influences. You're cherry-picking all the best stuff, you know, to make a very rich, priestess tradition there. The left brain stuff, the right brain stuff, I commend you for that. It sounds like you're really putting together a diverse and rich curriculum there.
Thank you so much. It's amazing to be immersed in this, to be co-creating it, and also we learn so much from the women who come to study and practice and train with us. The community continues to grow and deepen and expand.
So now you said this is a 3.5-year program, so this goes beyond your typical, maybe pagan or Wiccan thing where a lot of people study, for a year and a day or something. How does one progress? Are the people who study for 3.5 years, are they ordained at the end? Do they become legal clergy? Or are there different levels of priestess within your ranks?
Women come to us with all different levels of knowledge and experience. Some are deep in goddess tradition and newly arriving home again to Judaism. Some are steeped in Judaism and opening newly to the sacred feminine, and they come and we gather in training multiple weeks each year for 2 years. And the first 2 years of the training, we dive deep into the Neti Vot, the archetypes, do a lot of text study, experiential learning, ritual practice. And after those 2 years of training, those 4 in-person weeks and online and phone classes in between, they are initiated as Sovot, as temple keepers. And then they continue for another year and change, working particularly around life cycle ritual and officiating and also deepening their own personal priestessing paths. We really recognize and honor that women have so many different gifts, and we are not into making cookie-cutter priestesses. We really want to support women's empowerment and sharing their unique voices and gifts in the world. And so at the completion of the full program, women are ordained as kohanot, as Hebrew priestesses, and they also each take on, in careful consultation with us, an individual unique priestess name that speaks to their personal paths and gifts and ways they serve and embody in the world. And we have women who have completed the training that do all sorts of different things. We have in the program activists, someone just ran for judge, we have midwives, we have women who are also ordained rabbis, we have women who are actively leading radical liturgical experiences and rituals in their synagogue, we have many women who are officiating weddings and other life cycle rituals. So much magic is happening with the ways women who've come through our program are leading and sharing their work in the world.
Okay. A couple of the other things I found really interesting when I was going to the Kabbalah Center was they had, and I'm trying to remember exactly what it was called, but you had the Hebrew letters. There were 96 Hebrew letters in 3-letter configurations that were magical. Does that ring a bell?
Well, it sounds like it comes from the Sefer Yetzirah, which is a very ancient book of Jewish mysticism, and it's actually a book that we work with because in the Sefer Yetzirah there are 3 letters that are the mothers of the world, the Aleph, the Mem, and the Shin, which represent air, water, and fire, and that's a tradition that we like to work with when we're doing elemental priestessing. So, yes,
okay.
It rings a bell.
Yeah, well, I was just wondering if you incorporate any of the traditional Jewish, books or tools or anything like that in your practice. I mean, like, for instance, would you use a Torah or something like that? Or are you creating your own, as you try to, carve a new path, so to speak, with, you know, this, you know, your new curriculum.
We're deeply committed to engaging with traditional sources, and we very much are working with Torah and Hebrew text. Jill, I'll let you say more. You had something to say.
I wanted to share a moment because it really shows the ways that we do both. Often in this, when we have our summer retreat week, we gather on Shabbat to read the Torah outside. And one of our customs is that we will take the Torah, instead of reading it on a table, as is usually done, we will put it up against a tree to read it. And for us, that represents, you know, the Torah is called the Tree of Life and has been that for the Jewish people. But we also want to be in contact with the Tree of Life that is a tree, you know, that is a living tree, that is a source of green growth in the world. And so really it becomes one ritual moment, the reading of the sacred text and the contact with the sacred tree, which is a very, very old tradition of the ancient of the divine feminine in the ancient Near East. So,
yeah, I mean, I think, wasn't Asherah even represented as a tree at one point, maybe even in the temple?
Yes, the goddess Asherah is represented as a tree, yep.
Right, exactly. And I remember one of the things that really annoyed me at Kabbalah was that women weren't even supposed to touch the Torah, another one of those sexist things that really, you know, got under my skin. So you ladies wanted to talk about tonight's full moon. Which of you wanted to talk about that? I think you had a short song too to go along with that.
Jill, do you want to speak about Tikushat, and then I'll offer
sure.
a piece of blessing?
Great. So tonight is a holiday, and for the Hebrew priestesses, it's a very special holiday. It's a mystical holiday called Tu B'Shvat, which is the birthday of the trees. So it's the custom to celebrate trees by eating fruit and saying blessings over the fruit. And it's also the custom to remember God, the divine goddess, as the tree of life and celebrate the fruit of the cosmic tree. So many Jews are gathering around the world tonight to have a meal where they eat different kinds of fruit and talk about the different worlds and the coursing of the spiritual sap through the tree of life. So since for us the tree is also a symbol of the sacred feminine, it's a very special night tonight, and it always falls on the full moon.
Okay. Well, you know, you made me think about the menorah. I'm trying to remember the woman's name, and I'm so annoyed with myself that I can't remember. She's passed away now. She wrote the book, I think, in a chariot pulled by lions or something like that.
You're thinking of Asphodel Long.
Yes. I believe she looked at the menorah, didn't she, as a sacred tree, maybe, and she felt maybe it had roots, you know, to the sacred feminine. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but it felt like she had sort of reclaimed the menorah as a sacred feminine image.
No, the menorah is a hidden sacred tree at the heart of Jewish tradition, absolutely. The menorah is a stylized sacred tree, no question
okay.
about it.
Okay. Taya, did you want to sing that song that goes along with tonight's full moon?
Sure. I would love to sing a song about the sacred tree. And these words, Ella, Malka, Ne'emana, are connected to the word that many people are familiar with, Amen, the affirmation at the close of prayers. That is often understood as an acronym for El Melech Ne'eman, God is faithful, enduring. And we sing Ella, Malka, Ne'emana, giving praise to the goddess, and this song also has some words about the sacred tree as well. Ella Malka Ne'emana, she mother of us, we love and honor. Ella Malka Ne'emana, she is the tree, there is none beyond. Ella Malka Ne'emana, she mother of us, we love and honor. Ella Malka Ne'emana, she is the tree, there is none beyond her. Ella Malka Ne'emana, she mother of us, we love and honor. Ella Malka Ne'emana, she mother of us, we love and honor. Ella
That's lovely. And I'm looking at your priestess prayer book right now, and you have the goddess as a tree on the front of it. And I'm wondering, for those people who come to the Institute who don't know Hebrew, do you teach the Hebrew along with the English?
We try to be accessible to people with different levels of Hebrew. Some people come with lots of Hebrew. Some people come with none. That's why we transliterate a lot of our prayers so that people have access to them, even if they only read English.
Okay. Well, ladies, I know we sort of jumped all around, and I probably threw you some curveballs with, you know, interjecting all my, you know, questions from the Kabbalah Center. So I want to give you both the opportunity to share anything with listeners that maybe I haven't thought to ask you, or maybe, you know, we didn't really get to delve into a particular subject, you know, as much as you'd like. So, Taya, why don't you go first? And if there's anything you wanted to share with listeners that we haven't said already, you know, take 2 or 3 minutes, and then we'll go ahead and do the same for Jill.
Mostly what I would like to share with listeners is my excitement to be in this conversation and the awe I feel to be alive at this time. We at Kohenet are so aware of the many, 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 many generations of women who have come before us, who possibly did this work in subtle ways, definitely supported each other. To be engaged in this movement and this sisterhood feels like a miracle and a blessing, and it is so clearly time. I've been in awe at the level of excitement there is about serving and embodying the sacred feminine now, and particularly the ways that Jewish community is so ready for this. I came to this work from deep exploration and relationship with women's spirituality and the goddess, and returned home to Judaism, felt a call to heal at the roots through knowing the sacredness of earth and goddess, and really seeking that in Jewish tradition, and wasn't at first sure I would find it. And when I found it, it was such a deep coming home. And it's been amazing in this journey to support so many women finding their way home, to heal at the roots, to be working in the tradition of the women in their line, and to see what's possible and to also unfold what's next. We're in conversation with what has been, and really, really stepping into the miracle of what is to come. So my closing offering is a blessing, the priestess blessing. May she bless us, and may she keep us, and as she shines her face, may we embody grace, and may she bless us, and may she keep us, and as she brings relief, may we give birth to peace.
That's nice. I mean, that's, and it's so universal, you know. You could use that no matter what your goddess tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're located on the East Coast, correct, ladies?
I'm based on the West Coast and work on the East Coast, and Jill is based in New York City. Our training is in Connecticut at the Isabella Friedman Jewish Retreat Center in Falls Village, Connecticut, and we also run programming around the country. Our newly starting some West Coast programs, but our training that we are accepting new applicants for begins in July in Falls Village, Connecticut at Isabella Friedman. You can find out more on our website, www.kohenet.org.
And we want to spell Kohenet, K-O-H-E-N-E-T. So you can't really do this priestess training over the Internet. You have to be there in Connecticut to do it. Am I right or wrong?
The extended training that leads toward ordination is an in-person training with online options. We are newly this coming year with the release of the book later this spring, planning to launch online courses offering training in learning in discrete aspects of our program. And okay. The ordination program is in-person plus distance.
Okay. And
I
want to
say that we do have people from all over the country come, and also people from Canada and Ireland and London. It's a very diverse group geographically.
Okay. And Jill, please take a few minutes. You know, anything we didn't really get a chance to touch on, you know, was there anything you wanted to share with listeners that maybe I failed to ask?
I'm really feeling moved to share about what some of our graduates do because they are transforming the Jewish community, and I am in awe of them. They go out into communities and become prayer leaders and lead prayer that is gender balanced and, you know, friendly toward the sacred feminine. They create ritual. They become liturgical poets. Some of them are artists. Some of them are chaplains who are working with people in hospitals. Some of them are midwives. Some of them are death doulas who work with the dying. Some of them are activists who use ritual in their activism. Many of them are teachers of the Jewish community. Many of them are body workers. They're doing amazing things and diverse things, and they're really showing how religious leadership doesn't have to look like one thing, and it doesn't have to happen in one place, in a synagogue, and it doesn't have to only be in the model that we've known here in the United States for the last generation. There are lots of ways to serve the sacred, and they are showing us. And they are in tremendous sisterhood with one another. So I just really want to bless them, and I have such gratitude for the way that they have embraced this work, and I know that they're looking forward to having more sisters.
Okay. Well, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard the expression I use here, but I talk about, you know, we're blazing a trail with our pink-handled machetes. And I think you ladies definitely fit that category as well. I mean, you are blazing a new trail, a much-needed trail. You're incredible visionaries, so creative, so dedicated. I just want to thank you for the work you're doing in the world and for, you know, everything you're doing there. And, you know, you have your piece of the puzzle, and I'm intrigued and in awe. And, you know, I just want to say thank you, ladies, for being on the show tonight and sharing what you're doing with my listeners around the globe.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's such a privilege to be with you and your listeners. Thank you.
Okay. Well, was there anything else before I say goodnight, ladies?
Just happy full moon.
Okay, yeah, we're going to actually be talking a little bit about the full moon in just a minute here. So thank you so very much, and best of luck to you with your work. And please keep in touch, and if anything comes up down the road that you think would make an interesting show, you know, maybe a sacred holiday coming up that, you know, you have your particular twist on that, you know, you're reclaiming and rethinking and revisioning, please get in touch with me, and, you know, we'll talk about it on the show.
Wonderful.
All right, then. Good night, ladies.
Thank you. Good night.
Good
Bye-bye.
Night.
Well, listeners, it's about that time where we cross the threshold into the second half of the show. But first, I must ask you to wait just a minute or two so I can pay for airtime here. I'm grateful to Jo Carson and her commercial for her DVD, Dancing with Gaia, which helps me pay for airtime here. Otherwise, it would be out of my pocket. So I, you know, have to ask if you are a devoted fan, if you can, please consider sending a donation. You can do that by going to my webpage, KarenTate.com, click on the Goddess Store page, scroll down to the bottom, use some of the PayPal buttons to make a donation of any amount. And while you're there, I hope you'll check out my new book, Goddess Calling. You can pre-order it now on Amazon. They'll be shipping them in March. Or if you you can't wait until March and you got to have a copy right now, I do have a limited supply. You can get one from me, and the information is also there on my website on the Goddess Store page. So anyway, here is Jo Carson's.
Most people's psychic experiences are dreaming, and it's thought that it's the pineal gland making this chemical that does it. Now, this was the core finding. Core finding that the pineal gland makes a hallucinogen. We all hallucinate, we all go into a state of consciousness that for me is the collective unconscious. This psychic state is the collective unconscious, which is that consciousness of the planet, what's called the chthonic mind, the mind of the earth. Because all peoples, all races, all tribes from the past and right around the world have myths and legends which use symbols and archetypes which are identical. Identical. Every human being experiences this state of consciousness, which is the dream mind. That symbolic, archetypal, exemplified by fairy tales, or the creation myths and legends of all the different peoples. The symbols of them are the same, and to me that is the consciousness of the earth speaking to us.
Well, that was Serena Roney Dougal, Ph.D., speaking in Jo Carson's film, Dancing with Gaia, which explores the connection between earth energy, sacred sexuality, and the goddess as Gaia. It features 15 visionaries who give us tools to feel the life of the planet within ourselves. And the DVD comes with a 45-page mini book, and it only costs $20. And you can get your own copy by going to dancingwithgaia.com. Now, I am going to have the bees buzzing around in my bonnet segment in just a moment, but I wanted to share with you some information about the full moon. Some people who've been on my show before, Kathy Pagano and Vicki Noble, some things came across the internet in the last couple days, and they're describing this full moon in Cancer. Kathy Pagano said that this full moon makes us aware of what nurtures us. It asks, what do you want out of life? And then asks, why are you wasting your time and energy doing something you really don't want to do? And Vicki Nobles sent out something talking about the full moon in Cancer. She said the full moon is conjunct the black moon Lilith, the dark goddess who sees through our illusions and helps us cut the cord to what is not real. She said it should be an interesting month. She's similar to Throma, the Tibetan black Dakini, helping us to practice cutting through our hopes and fears. And the Goddess Temple in Orange County put out something about full moon ceremony they were having this week. And the teacher there was Reverend Lisa Lockhart. And they sent out a little something to talk about consciously working with the moon. And this is about the power of full moon energy. And it goes like this. Every month, our world is affected by the energy of a different constellation of the zodiac. At the full moon, the maximum amount of light comes to Earth and to you. With more light comes more shadow, so this energy can work for you or against you, depending on intention and awareness. Energy is immoral. It goes where it is directed. We must consciously set intentions to direct the full moon energy for the greatest good within our lives, rather than allow it to randomly ricochet around, hitting whatever it will. Wise use of these energies help us on our life path, pointing us to areas that we need to work with, and minimizing negative consequences. Honoring the traditions of theosophy, spiritualism, and shamanism, the full moon ceremony at the Goddess Temple or yours at your home can enhance your ability to receive and consciously work with these powerful energies. You can invoke and pray. You can talk about, look into spiritual anatomy. And, as Kathy And Vicky said, you know, this is the time, excuse me, this is the time to be thinking about you might be wasting your time or energy doing something you really don't want to do. What do you really want out of life? And use these moon energies to get your locomotion going, you know, use that fire and steam from Bridget of this time of year as well, and, you know, sort of get yourself motivated and moving with that cosmic steam, getting you going in the right direction. So I hope that's helpful. And I apologize for my voice. I have had laryngitis all week and a cough, and I'm surprised you haven't heard more of that all day on the show tonight. But the bees in my bonnet, yes, yes, here they come. So, as I promised this year, I was going to be getting to more of that, the bees buzzing around in my bonnet. In other words, what out there is working in terms of being in alignment with goddess spirituality or goddess ideals, and what is not? Those are always the bees buzzing around in my bonnet. And first of all, I want to make sure you know that the 1 billion rising for justice is going to be happening again. You know that V-Day celebration, that Eve Ensler of Vagina Monologue fame put into motion last year. Well, it's going to happen again this Thanksgiving. So if you want to find out more, there's different things you can do. The easy thing is if you're on Facebook, go to V-Day, V-Day. And when you're there, they have a link you can click on called 1billionrising.org, where you can click on it and find out things that are happening again this year in your local area to support women's issues and fight against domestic violence. Because, as it says on the V-Day page, violence is the methodology that sustains patriarchy. Without it, things would change. Let me repeat that. Violence is the methodology that sustains patriarchy. Without it, things would change. So please go to the V-Day Facebook page, and from there, after you've looked at it and clicked on the 1 billion rising button and signed up to be on their email list, click on the 1billionrising.org site for things happening in your local area. But just as a little bit of an explanation, if this is the first time you're hearing about this, this is what the email that came out said. Dear 1 Billion Risers for Justice, we write to you 1 month before the 14th of February, the actual day we will rise and dance for justice. But we all know 1 Billion Rising for Justice is clearly not just a day. It is a campaign, a strategy, a determination, a new energy. It is months of preparation, investigation, and collaboration. It is the careful, conscious work of building a coalition, inviting new activists, and acknowledging those who have been on the front lines for years. It is envisioning and writing new laws and legislation. It is breaking the silence, releasing our stories, naming and identifying injustices, creating demands, organizing forums and panels and events, as well as writing songs and poems and plays and making videos. It is identifying the places where we will rise. It is learning about our sisters' struggles around the world and making them our own. It is bringing the most marginalized to the front. It is the grassroots leading the way. It is men joining and standing with us. It is acknowledging the places of intersection. It is a decision, a vision of the world where the bodies of women and the body of our Mother Earth are honored and cherished and safe and held sacred. It is trust. It is expanding our identities and wounds to include the others. It is a fierce refusal to undermine or attack or diminish I'm sorry, let me repeat that. It is a fierce refusal to undermine or attack or diminish, but to take the time to find the language to express our grievances and frustrations with the belief that each one of us is in this struggle, is on a path of evolution and revolution, wounded, broken, and doing our best. It is a wild energy that says, yes, freedom is possible. Yes, unity is possible. Yes, everything is possible. It is rising, dissolving borders, edges, separations. It is love, an unstoppable wave of love and justice. Wow. Could you feel the energy in those words? Whoever wrote that, they were incredible. So anyway, get on the bandwagon this year. Go to the website, see what's happening in your area, maybe sponsor something in your city or for your group. And the other couple things that are bees buzzing around in my bonnet is two articles from AlterNet. I'm just going to share a little bit with you. The first one is from Tom Hartman, from the Tom Hartman Show. It says, Republicans are willing to let Americans suffer and die to undermine Obama's presidency. Republicans are willing to let Americans suffer and die to undermine Obama's presidency. Republican sabotage is killing Americans. Never in the history of our nation has a political party tried so hard to actively sabotage a piece of legislation like today's Republican Party is doing with Obamacare. Republicans in Washington and across the nation are so committed to sabotaging President Obama's presidency, they are willing to let people die. While Republicans have failed 47 times to repeal Obamacare, or at the very least defund it on the national level, their relentless sabotage efforts are working very well on state levels. From Texas to Florida, Republicans are preventing millions of Americans from having access to affordable, life-saving health care. Theda Skopel, a professor of government and sociology at Harvard, has compiled the data showing just how successful Republican sabotage efforts over Obamacare have been. As Skopel points out, 23 states under Republican control have refused to expand Medicaid under Obamacare and have refused to set up their own state-run health insurance exchanges. As a result, those states have only enrolled a small fraction of their citizens eligible for Medicaid, and their enrollments in the federal health care exchanges aren't much better. Millions of Americans in these states are being denied access to life-saving health care. Skopel notes states like California and New York that have both expanded Medicaid under Obamacare and created their own state-run exchanges are having very few problems signing up their citizens for health care. These states are 43% of the way toward their projected Medicare enrollment numbers and 37% of the way toward their projected enrollment numbers in the exchanges. Skopel told TPM, quote, you go back to how the law was designed, for better or worse, it gives states a lot of responsibility. The states that have actually done things the way the law envisioned are the ones that are at this early stage doing the most toward those goals. And to conclude, even the conservative-leaning fact-checking site Pundit Fact agreed with the claim, saying that we rate the statement mostly true. And the statement they're referring to is Republicans are willing to let Americans suffer and die to undermine Obama's presidency. In short, the sabotage we're seeing today from the Republican Party is unprecedented, costly, and deadly. Republican lawmakers are willing to let people die just to put a permanent stain on the Obama presidency. And that's just wrong. And that is from Tom Hartman. And finally, to conclude tonight's Bees in My Bonnet, something a little bit more positive, comes from AlterNet as well, from an article here by Jody Gummow, G-U-M-M-O-W. Big Pharma's Best Kept Secret, a Mediterranean diet can save your life. A Mediterranean diet can save your life. For those looking to start the new year off on the right track with a health kick that's easy and can help you live longer, it's time to bring out the olive oil and wine. Recent major clinical trials have confirmed years of research showing that heart disease can not only be prevented by following a Mediterranean diet, but this eating pattern is proven to reduce heart attacks, strokes, and death in both heart patients and healthy patients. No, I'm not going to read all the details about that. I'm just going to tell you this short list of things that comprise the Mediterranean diet. So you would eat more fruits, not a surprise, 3 servings a day, eat more vegetables, 2 a day, including a salad, use olive oils abundantly, eat less red meat and more white meat, indulge in plenty of fish, snack on legumes like nuts and beans, eat red sauces, and enjoy a glass of wine with dinner if you choose. So, those are the bees buzzing around in my bonnet today. So, I guess as we come to a close, listeners, I want to thank you for your listener loyalty. I hope I made it clear at the opening of the show how much it means to me to hear from you. So please, don't hesitate to contact me and let me know your show ideas. Let me know what you like about the show, what you'd like to see more of, what you'd like to see less of, because I am here for you. And please, I hope you will, if you really want to help me, I would appreciate you going to Amazon and ordering some new copies, some copies of my new book, Goddess Calling. They can be pre-ordered. It would also be great if you haven't yet gotten a copy of my book, Walking an Ancient Path. That is another of my books I would really like to pick up the sales in as well. They're both from the same publisher, and it would be wonderful to boost my sales and show them how much my listeners out there would like to read my books, and that just helps me get the next book published. So thank you so very much. And I guess I think it might be nice to close tonight's show with some music. But before I do, I realized that I don't think I really gave you the website to those wonderful ladies who were on our show tonight. And I want to make sure I do that. You can go to one of their websites, which is holytaya.com, HOLYTAYA.com. Also, kohenet.org, KOHENET.org. That's the Hebrew Priestess Institute. And if you like some of the messages and things I've been sharing, like I can hear her breathing, or the resolutions in Return of the Light that I read last week, let me know, because if you like that, like I said, I will be doing more of it. So let's go ahead and close tonight's show with some music, because we have a little bit of time. This is Celia, one of our newer artists, and feels appropriate. Let's hear her her cut, Bringing in the Light. Good night, listeners. I will be back with you next week, and I will actually have Laura Flanders from Grit TV on the show next Wednesday, so you won't want to miss it. Good night.
Yeah, bringing in the light, been in the darkness for too long. Yeah, bringing in the light, bringing in the light by the way of a song. It's the love that gives, turns to happiness. Bringing in the joy, bringing in the light, bringing in the bliss. I'm dropping the worry, I'm dropping the shame, I'm dropping the guilt, I'm dropping the blame. I'm dropping the walls, I'm dropping the windows, dropping the doors. I'm dropping who's wrong, I'm dropping who's right, I'm dropping my put 'em up and fight. I'm dropping the roof, I'm dropping the porch, I'm dropping the floors. And I'm bringing in the light, been in the darkness for too long. Yeah, I'm bringing in the light, bringing in the light by the way of the song. It's the love I give to happiness. Bringing in the joy, bringing in the light, bringing in the bliss. I'm dropping the plan, I'm dropping the plot, I'm dropping the twist me up in knots. I'm dropping the past, prevailing over what's in store. I'm dropping the scarcity of enough, I'm dropping that constellated stuff. I'm dropping the points, I'm dropping the game, I'm dropping the score. And I'm bringing in the light, been in the darkness for too long. Yeah, I'm bringing in the light, bringing in the light by the way of the song. It's the Mm-hmm.